Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio, and just across the way, George P. Fraser. George, who says nothing is impossible? You've been doing nothing for years.
Thank you so much.
I'm just saying, yeah.
You know, okay, so you can answer this for me. When I hear that new intro music,
yeah.
I feel like I'm either on Shindig or Hullabaloo. Which one is it?
We should have little surfboards out.
Totally.
Yeah. Well, we can go through the list of songs, maybe pick another one.
Okay.
Now that we're in our 11th year, Real Recovery, and welcome to all the Faith Radio family members in Missouri or Missouri. How do you say it? Do you know how to say it correctly?
Well, my dad was from St. Joe.
St. Joe.
Missouri.
Missouri. So you say Missouri.
He said when we were little, it was Missouri. And then when he got older, it was Missouri. So
okay.
I don't know. I always got a mixed message from him.
So your dad is from that area?
Yes.
Wow, I did not know that.
And I used to go down to Missouri on business and call on Russell Stover in Kansas City. We're in the candy business.
Yeah.
And Gateway Candy in St. Louis, go to the Cards games, the Blues games.
Nice.
I love Missouri.
Do you have a recovery story from sugar?
I think it was my first addiction.
I bet it was.
I have a tendency to get addicted to things that have a white powder. And I think, you know, you put your kid, you give him a sugar cereal, hot cocoa, and put him in front of the TV. And what do you get 50 years later? Right here, George Fraser.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So I'd love for especially our new listeners, people who have just joined the network and maybe be tuning in for the first time tonight, hear a little bit about our story, not only how we came about doing Real Recovery, but how we connected in life and became friends.
Well, the friend thing is a stretch, but it's honesty. We're Christian radio. What stations, what cities are we in?
We have 33 stations now, so.
In Missouri?
No, we're just, they're, no, George. You should ask these questions off air.
Okay.
Yeah, not on air.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, tell listeners, remind them of your history in working with men in recovery.
Well, I'm an addict myself in recovery, and do you want me to talk a little bit of my story?
I'd love to hear your story. I think your story is amazing.
I'll give it the short one.
No, I don't want to hear the short one.
Okay. Well, I had success at an early age. I won punt, pass, and kick for my hometown when I was 9, and things looked good, Bill. Unfortunately, I peaked a little bit. I was always a good athlete in school. I went to a prep school, the best school in Minnesota at the time. And the big sports there were hockey and football. And I played baseball and hockey. Mm-hmm. I made varsity baseball in 9th grade. And that was the year at 15. Now, my mom had cancer. And my dad had left when we were 13. And so at that point, things changed for me. And 15 years old, 9th grader, varsity baseball. I started, made it as a pitcher, played every inning as a first baseman. And the first day I got drunk, and I had, you know, I had a few drinks before to be cool. We're playing the varsity playoff game against another school. And we beat them. Well, that day, my mom had a cancer operation. So after the game, we go to the hospital and see her, and she's hooked up to all these machines. And well, what happened, Bill, is that night I went over to a friend's house, and I had 4 16 ounces of cold 45 malt liquor that was warm.
Mm.
Yep. And I got the feeling.
Mm.
I got the feeling, and that would change my life. For the first time in my life, I got this warm feeling, and I felt okay. And after that, my mom was sick all the time. And that summer, I started smoking cigarettes and smoking pot. And the next year, I made the varsity hockey team. We won the state private school tournament, which was a big deal. And I got kicked out after that. because I wasn't going to school class when I'd go there. They knew I was getting high. I dyed my hair blonde. It looked pretty orange. I thought I was cool. And I got kicked out of school, and I went to a public school, and my addiction was on the way. I wound up getting kicked out of the private school. I got kicked out of confirmation. I had gotten kicked out of a baseball game the summer before. I inside the park home run, came around, and the guy calls me, "You're out!" And I stood up and started slugging that big chest protector. And there's a pattern here. I was really mad that my dad left, and I didn't know it at the time. And my addiction took off when I was a freshman in college at the University of South Florida in Tampa. It raged. I went to the University of South Florida in Tampa. It was rated the number three party school in the country by Playboy magazine. Most people look at, you know, what would be a good one to get a job. That's what my head was at.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't get into the number one and two, so I went to three. Awful. I got arrested, thrown in jail for loitering, which they charge you with so they can search you for drugs. I didn't have any police interference, interfering with an officer, resisting arrest, and drunk and disorderly, which were all true. Got beat up. I remember I was in jail in Broward County, Fort Lauderdale, and I said to a guy, I'll never forget this, "You can't do this. I have rights." He goes, "You're in a southern jail, son. You have no rights."
Wow.
Okay, thank you. And I went to court, and the judge, my attorney said, "Mr. Fraser is going to college, trying to better himself." No, I was. And I was just getting hammered every day and going playing golf. And the judge said to me, "Mr. Fraser was as high as a Georgia pine." And I thought, this probably won't go well. And he said, "I sentenced you to a year in the state prison."
Whoa. Serious?
"What do you think about that, Mr. Fraser?" I couldn't even talk. I wanted to say, you know, actually, I don't agree with you. I think it's a little harsh.
Yeah.
And he said, "Sentence suspended." I didn't know what that meant. Well, what it meant was I was on probation for a year.
So that was hanging over your head.
That's hanging over my head.
Okay.
So the next night, we went out to celebrate.
No. You're celebrating now?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I didn't go to prison.
This is not a wake-up call for you.
Oh, gosh, no. And
no. Can I just tell you the most disturbing part about this story so far?
Sure.
You punched the umpire.
Yeah.
All right.
Continue. I hit the chest protector.
I understand.
Yeah, my dad came out of the stance and just headlock. I think pile driver could have been the... but it shows you where I was at. And
let's go back to the celebration night now. After
so we go
out, you're not going to prison.
And a friend of mine says, "Hey, I'll buy you breakfast at this place."
Okay.
So he goes, "Park down the street." I didn't know what that was. So steak, eggs. He goes, "Okay, you got to head to the car and I'll follow you." I go, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "I don't have any money. We got to do a dine and dash."
Mm.
I go, "Hey, I'm loaded. I'm on probation." He goes, "It'll be okay." So I started walking out. Now, next door was one of those motels on the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I look back, I'm going to my car, and I see a guy chasing my buddy. And I put two and two together. So I ran into the motel, you know, the concrete, and they're outside. Mm-hmm. And you run up, and I get in the second floor. Well, I can hear the cops coming. There's sirens, and I don't know what to do. So they had one of these garbage cans that would look like a penguin. You know, feed me. So I hide in the garbage can, and I can hear him, "Okay, we got the one apprehended. The other guy's wearing a green and yellow rugby shirt." So I took that off in there, like a drunk guy running around with me. And I could hear him, and then I don't hear him. So I'm looking out the little lid of the garbage can, and I decided to make a run for it. Well, there's a spotlight on me from a cop car. So I go to the end, and there's a fence. I'm going to jump over it, but it's barbed wire.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing that. So I run downstairs while the cops are chasing me through neighborhoods and everything. It was probably one of the most exciting things in my life, but I know I'm going to prison, and I'm trying to sober up, and I'm running through yards, and the cops, they got that light on the side of the car shining on me. So I hit under a guy's truck. Cops drive by me. I wait like an hour. And I walk over to my car, and I get in and start it, and I run out of gas like a block away. So I park it, and I went and spent the night on the beach. And you'd think that I would never use again, but it just started. I came back the next year. I hit a telephone pole going 90 miles an hour without a seatbelt. They came and cut me out. My sister told me that my mom, who was dying of cancer, drove by the car in the ambulance and wailed because they were sure I was dead. I'm at the hospital. I lip off to the guys. I'd hit my head. I was drunk. I didn't want the doctors touching me. I wanted my doctor. Wake up the next day, and my dad's telling me all this. So embarrassing. So I had to go to court. I go to treatment. I read the big blue book, and it made sense. And the first night we were, my dad goes with me, okay?
To a meeting?
Yeah. No, to every group.
Oh, okay.
This is 1977, so they're going around the group introducing themselves. I'm Ralph. I'm an alcoholic, blah, blah, blah. Gets to my dad. I'm Bob. I'm a concerned person. This is George, and he is an alcoholic and a drug addict. You know, I didn't even get to introduce myself. I got sober. And I was sober for 2 months, and my mom told me one day she needed to ride to the hospital, and I said, I'm playing racquetball. Can you get your sister? And she goes, no, I'm really sick. I go, Mom, I'm playing well. I got a match. I left to play racquetball. My mom never got out of the hospital. I carried that around, and I'm saying these two things about the doctor and the racquetball game, because God shows up on this. She dies, go to the funeral. I decided I needed to go back to college, and I thought about, a guy told me about Bethel College in St. Paul, Minnesota, where you can't drink, you can't do any drugs. And I had become a Christian in high school, but I never got the lifestyle right. A minister came to my house, and he'd meet with me every week, and he'd say, if you died tonight, where would you spend eternity? I go, well, I'd go to hell for sure. He said, you want to change that one night? I said, yeah. So we read John 3, got on my knees, made a decision for Christ, and I started going to church, but I didn't get sober. I was going to church all through college, so I go to Bethel College, and the first day they're in at a pep fest in the gym, and never forget this, and they're singing some song like clap your hands, stomp your feet, Jesus Christ is really neat, something like that, and I'm going, boy, did I overshoot the mark here. I gotta get out of here. So in November of that year, I decided I'm gonna leave. I'm at the church bank window to get money for the weekend. I'm straight, okay? And the guy behind me is talking about they got a hockey club. They're going to be a varsity team next year, but they need a goalie. I turn around. I go, oh, wow, I used to play goalie in high school. I played 1 week practice. The next week we go up to Hibbing, play. And my self-esteem had taken a lot of hits with the car accident, the calling the doctor. Everybody in town knew. Name in the paper. And played the first game. They had 45 shots. We lost 4-1. I played pretty well. They hit the pipe a lot. And next day we come down. There's a small town paper, and it's got Bethel has a good program to start. There'll be a varsity team next year. And they have a real base to build their program around in freshman goalie George Fraser. And I say that because it makes me look good. But the other thing was it was such a God thing. I hadn't played in 5 years. I wasn't in shape. But I needed that, and it got me into school, and people knew who I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I did well. In my senior year, We were playing golf, and my dad said, you know, I think you could have a beer. You've been doing good. And I got the green light, and he said, you know, I know it was a mistake when you were on your third beer before dinner showed up. Started doing cocaine, go back to my senior year. I didn't play hockey because I needed to take a couple classes that I needed to study. And I got a DWI in January of that year, and they didn't kick me out of school. Bethel College saved my life. And I got back in, and I did well and graduated. I got out, and I was doing coke. I had a job, went to treatment, resigned from a job with a big firm, came back, worked for a candy brokerage, went to treatment again. I was in and out 7 years. Went to treatment the last time, and I started doing what they told me to do. I didn't stay sober right away, but 2 years later, September 17th, 1984, I'm driving up to Fargo, North Dakota from Minneapolis for a grocery food show. I was selling candy, pulling over to get sick, driving up, listening to Chuck Swindoll on the radio. I'd start doing that. So what I'm saying is bit by bit, things are changing. And since then, I have never had a mood-altering chemical or a drink since September 17th, 1984. How did I do it? Well, I went to accountability groups that used the 12 steps. I was in a Bible study. I went to church, and I'd pray every day before I got up for sobriety. Give me the power, strength, and desire to stay sober. And I got up to my year is coming up. My year of sobriety. Now, I had never gotten a year, Bill. I'd gotten a bunch at 3 months. I had 9 months once, and I went to a bar. There was a hockey game, and a guy we went to high school with was playing with the St. Louis Blues. And I'm standing in the hotel bar before we went to the game, got my nine-month medallion on Monday. This is Wednesday, and all my buddies are there, and the bartender says, hey, Captain, what do you drink? I go, give me a cherry 7-Up. He said, you drink Shirley Temples? Everybody laughed. I go, scotch neat. I was off. But this time I had gotten it, and I'm coming up on a year. Well, incidentally, my 10-year high school reunion was right around the year dry date. And I had a friend who was a girl. I wasn't dating her, but I had met her at a recovery function. And we were talking, and she said, tell me about your recovery program. And I told her, and she goes, I'm really impressed with that. I go, thank you. She goes, there's no way I could stay sober with a program that's so boring. You have no fun. And we started, I wasn't dating her. We'd go to movies. We'd go to plays. We'd go bowling. It was fun. My year's coming up. And I told her, I'm going to the high school reunion. I got a hotel room booked. Suite. She goes, you're going to your high school reunion. All your buddies do coke. They have hotel rooms, and you've got one booked, and you think you're going to stay sober. I go, hey, I'm going to take you home right now. How dare you say that to me? Dropped her off, and I decided, you know what? She's right. So I didn't go to it.
Boy, that's interesting, George. Real Recovery that you're listening to, and our George Fraser is telling his story tonight. We're going to talk more about that when we come back. We're also going to discuss the 12 steps and the biblical basis for each one of them. Even if you've never had an addiction, these 12 steps are really an interesting set of guideposts for helping you navigate through any kind of temptation or addiction. We'll be right back in just a minute.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery. Bill and George, Ryan's on the board tonight. And hopefully during the break, you were able to text the word APP, that's APP, George, to 877-933-2484. We are hearing George's story. I always love hearing it. every couple of years, and now is the time we're doing it. And George, during the break, I was reminded of that time that you were in the hospital demanding that you get your own doctor. I didn't know you could call the shots at that point.
Sure, I called the shots for everything. I remember my dad told me, he goes, you know, if you saw a cop on the other side of the street and you've been drinking, you're going to go out of your way to go tell him what you think of cops. And I said, yeah, what's your point? I remember he said to me one time, and we had a very close relationship off and on, and he said to me, you know, your problem is you think everything's a big joke. And he was right. But I said, no, I think you're a big joke, and he thought it was funny. We had a good relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the best thing he did for me was love me. He wrote me a letter that he couldn't be with me when I was acting out that way, that he cared enough for me. And I still have the letter. And when I read it, I thought, what a joke. When I read it as an older man, I think, wow, what God thinks. So I'm in treatment with my dad. We'll back up a little bit. And they had this thing called Family Week, okay, which we called Hell Week. And what that is everybody in your group is in a circle, and there's two chairs in the middle. And my dad and I were sitting across from each other. And basically what it is he's going to tell me all the stuff I've done. Now, my dad was the chairman of a company, and he had a yellow legal pad. And he started off and said, George, do you know what it's like to have a total mess up for a kid? The words might not be as accurate as that, but that was the point. I was like, no, Dad. He had times, dates. Everything he had was true.
Hmm.
There was a lot he didn't have, but everything he had was true. And he looked at me and he said, what do you have to say for yourself, son? Now, this was the guy who was my hero, and I'm hurting. I said, I'm sorry. And he goes, never forget this. George, a real man, if he's truly sorry, he doesn't do it anymore. And I was like, okay, so now I'm not even a real man, you know? And I held it together. I went back in my room and I just sobbed. And that was the real start of realizing my powerlessness.
Mm-hmm.
That unless I had an outside agency, nothing would change. I knew what he said was right, but I couldn't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got out. I did use a few times after that, but we were going in the right direction.
Mm. Okay, so we're going to come back after a break. And, George, I want to figure out how many treatments there were, how many years it took to reach a place of sobriety, and some of the God appointments along the way, because there's plenty of them, isn't there?
Yep.
There's moments that you go...
The ones we know about.
Of the ones we know about, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So you're listening to Real Recovery, Bill and George. George's story is amazing. I would love for you to let George know that you love his story, too. And if you want to send him a message tonight, you can text it over 877-933-2484. We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to Real Recovery, now in its 11th year. George, we've been doing this 11 years.
Seems longer, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Yeah, it does. So anyway, your story is fascinating. I think I've heard your story several times, but every time I hear it, I hear new things, which is amazing. I know you probably add stuff in that you forget to tell in previous...
I'd like to forget all of it. And I think it's very important, if you're in a recovery out there, that you need to tell your story once a year so you hear it.
Yeah.
And really what your story is God's story in you.
God's story. So when you got through, how many treatments did you have to go through to get clean?
Three treatments. I used after the third one. In and out, circled the drain of recovery for 7 years. Started when I was 20. Thank you to the Minnesota Department of Corrections for that. Go to treatment or go to prison. And then after I was in treatment, I thought maybe I could have done prison better. So anyway, I think where we left out was my 10-year high school reunion. And this girl told me I wouldn't stay sober. I dropped her off. And I was thinking, driving home, she's right. And I called her a couple days later and told her that. I wound up going to an exhibition Minnesota Vikings game instead of my 10-year reunion. And I'm sitting there thinking, how lame. The guy that took me was like my most normal friend. He died 2 years ago of alcoholism. He was a great guy. But at the time, he could know when to pick his spots. So I knew I had to get sober. What happened? I found a group of guys that I wanted to be like, an accountability group. They used the 12 steps. And I remember the first time I went in there, it was a shirt and tie crowd.
Mm-hmm.
And there were cops, teachers, business guys, a bunch of grand traders. And I really liked these guys. I didn't get sober at first. And I remember one of the last times I went out and drank, the leader, a guy named Bob, said, I got something to give you. And I said, well, you know, I'll do whatever it takes. I'm crying. And I was really mean it. He goes, I want you to listen to this cassette tape. That's how old I am. I go, what is it? He goes, it's Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto. I go, well, what are you going to do next? Go to the ballet and wear tights? He goes, you said you would do whatever it took. This will get you closer to God. Listen to it.
Really?
I started to. It did.
How did that get you closer to God?
A lot of the old composers like Bach wrote music for God.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like John Coltrane did, the saxophone player.
Yeah.
And it elevates my thoughts. You know, whatever is praiseworthy and true, set your minds on that. And when I read my Bible now, I do that. But I started listening to people and then acting on it. And in this group, the first step is step one, where we admit we're powerless over alcohol and drugs, and our life's unmanageable. And the guys would tell me, you're powerless over everything. Now, most of these guys were Catholics. The rest of the guys were Christians. They took attendance. And I didn't get sober right away, but you know what? It was Monday night, and I woke up on Monday and thought, great, my meeting is tonight. And if you don't have a recovery group, accountability group, Bible study group, church group that you don't look forward to going to, you haven't found the right one. We don't do what we have to do, should do, or need to. We do what we want to do. And the problem is, for a lot of us in our youth, and what we think we want to do is killing us. And when that's gone, that was our solution, our lover, all that. There's a grieving process. It's very hard to get sober. Step two is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And I thought, I'm certainly not sane. My last treatment, I was diagnosed as cocaine-induced psychosis. That scared me. But what it was I couldn't tell if things were happening or I was dreaming. And that's a real scary spot to be. You look scared.
I'm a little scared right now. Yeah.
Don't make me mad, Bill. Anyway, I started reading my Bible every day, listening to what was then KTIS with Chuck Swindoll, Insight for Living, 9 o'clock in the morning. And at night, I would listen to a guy before I went to bed. Bill, you know what I'm talking about.
Bill Pierce.
Night Sounds.
Yeah. Still out there on the internet.
You know who wrote the intro music?
Debussy.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah, thank
Gold
you.
Star for Bill.
Yeah. Thank you.
Got any extra Bibles around you want to take home? And step three is we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understand it. And that's Jesus. And so what a guy told me is, don't take this lightly. You're not just giving your drinking, your drug problem, you're giving your whole being. And what it does, George, it gets you out of the decision-making business. What would Jesus do? And what I thought is, well, you know, if I just get sober, I'll be okay. The Blue Recovery Book says our drinking is but a symptom. Our problems are that we're self-seeking, selfish, and egocentric. I want to do what I want to do, and I want to do a lot of it. I think for me, my off button's broken, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's glazed donuts, cocaine, watching golf on TV, playing golf, The moderation thing I didn't get. And working the steps, there's nothing magical except that it gets rid of your ego. It's ego deflating. So God gets in there. No man can serve two masters. And we have to get rid of ourselves. And step four was the hardest, fearless and searching moral inventory of ourselves. And I flip-flop searching and fearless all the time. But really what it is causes of conditions. We can stop the drinking and the drugging at detox, Bill. And if that was, you know, the big problem, we would turn out winners. But mm-hmm. The problem is us, okay? And the first commandment is, you shall put no other gods before me. Well, every time I sin, I choose to do what I want to do rather than what God wants me to do. So there's a process here. You need to know what God wants you to do. And you have to recognize that you're going to bow a knee to him. You're going to pick up your cross and deny yourself daily. We look at our resentments and our fears. Well, I had so many resentments. And what that does is I can't have a resentment against you and have a relationship with God. And resentment is the number one offender of going back to using. I heard a guy say that he got 14 years of recovery, and at the gathering, he didn't think the person who introduced him did a good enough job. The guys that he was hanging out with certainly didn't appreciate him enough. His boss really didn't, and of course his wife didn't either. So he went out and drank for 8 years and then came back. Well, that's how I think, too.
Wow.
So you better watch your step, pal. But that's
gets
us away from God. You know, and the Bible tells us that. I think it's in 1st or 2nd John. Don't say you love a God who you can't see if you don't love a brother who you can see. And you're looking at me, and I know that has to convict you, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just totally.
Yeah, I have darting eyes right now.
So I did the resentments, my fear. Bill Wilson was one of the first two guys in the recovery movement, and he writes that he would show the world he was on his way when his business career started. And another problem for a lot of us, Bill, I had big manitis. I was a big deal, and I wanted everybody to know it. And when I read my book, it says that no one is righteous, not one. No one is a big deal. God's the big deal. And the layers started peeling away. We did the resentments, the fears, sex conduct, all over the map on that. Don't, you know, need to go into details. I was serving my own God, which was me. And then we look at, after that, we say to God, ourselves, and another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs, priest, minister, and if you're a Christian, it's not about feeling better. It's confessing your sins so you get forgiveness. Problem with the 12 steps, Bill, is a lot of people work it without Jesus. They do it to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And even the people that don't believe in God, they are sober through the general providence of God that he's doing for them what they couldn't do and didn't want to do. And they don't give him credit, but God's doing it. I don't think anybody gets sober without God doing most of us. Why all of a sudden did I want to quit when everybody else, the state of Minnesota, bosses, family, anybody who knew me, wanted me to quit except me? And one day I wanted to quit. If you're thinking today and you're struggling in recovery, and one of the problems that we have on Christian recovery shows is we make it sound too easy. That I found God and everything. I became a Christian 7 years before I got sober, but he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. And I knew I wanted that. In fact, I'd go get drunk and I'd talk about God. It was there.
Yeah.
Your recovery starts before you quit using because God's there. And then after five, we look at all our sinful behavior, our defects of character. And we make a list of them. You got to write them down like you do the four step. You got to get a pen out. And I see a lot of guys that observe the steps. They read them and think they did it. I got a friend who used to go into bars and the bartender would go, hey, you want a drink? And he'd go, I'm not here to watch. You got to do that on your recovery. There's a lot of people in Christianity and recovery that are there to watch. They're there to watch the sermon, the choir, and they think they're doing it. You know what? You can read all you want about God, and I encourage you to do it. You can listen to all the tapes you want about God, and I encourage you. But knowing it, you got to apply it. And you know, the book of James, where we got a lot of the 12 steps, says even the demons know Scripture and shudder.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do it. So then we humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. And, of course, there's a prayer. God, you know, I'm not willing to have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you remove everything from me that stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out to do your bidding. And then we got to look at 8 and 9, which is made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And 9, make direct amends wherever possible except when to do so would injure them or others. Very, very rarely is that invoked correctly. And I know we're going to go to break here, so how are we?
I think we can take a break because you have set that up when you say very rarely is that done correctly. Step 9, make a direct amends to such people where, whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. I want you to expand on that. Is that good?
Absolutely.
All right, we'll take a little break here. Listen to Real Recovery with Bill and George. So glad that we're hearing George's story tonight. If you want to send him a note of encouragement, I know he'd appreciate it. 877-933-2484. Has it been 38 years of sobriety, George?
It will be in September, but, you know, we'll talk about it. It's one day at a time for George.
Of course. All right. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. We're going to take a little break. Be right back.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Real Recovery.
Welcome back to the show. You're listening to Real Recovery, a story about overcoming addiction through Jesus. And I'm so glad that tonight's story is a George Fraser story. And we are loving hearing your story, George.
Thank you. It's very painful for me. I'm grateful, but it's good exercise for me to humble myself that I didn't do any of it. I didn't even have the willingness to do it. That's why I pray before I get out of bed for the power, strength, and desire to stay sober today.
Yeah. Haven't you, though, over the years when you would get a chip, another anniversary chip, and you would give your testimony, you would make it sound as if it was all the work you did, and then one day you woke up and said, "Now it's never been me."
Gosh, that doesn't sound like me. Actually, what happened... Excuse me. I got a 25-year deal, and I think I went to 4 gatherings that week. Now, you know, I used to speak for a living, so it's like the Academy Awards. There's not a dry eye in the house on the 4th one, including me, I might say. And I'm driving home, and the question is, how did you do it, George? Well, I was more than willing to tell him how I did, because, you know, with this brilliance, you want to share it. That would be selfish.
Right.
Driving home in the car, didn't hear a voice. How did you do it? You went to recovery to get your card signed so you didn't go to prison. Give credit where credit's due. Hmm. And in recovery circles, I had always downplayed the Jesus because I didn't want to offend anybody. And I got convicted that it was... I didn't want to be that guy. Here's a God who took on flesh and got crucified for my sins, but I didn't want to be associated with him that might look at me negatively. And I read in the Bible like a week later. This is how God works on me. If you don't acknowledge me before men, I won't acknowledge you before the Father. Bingo, game change. And there's little things like that that happen. You don't become holy all at once. It's more and more all the time. And I know, you know, I can prove it to you. I used to be kind of a smart aleck guy.
No.
Yeah, no. Like, just like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one day, you know, I used to say, well, if I insult the guy, it's a joke. That's on him. And I realized I'm not okay with insulting people. I still have to work on that. Present company excluded. But that's how guys show intimacy, too, isn't it? Intimacy by insult?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I get back, and I'm doing 8-9. And we had talked about not making an amend because you don't want to injure somebody else. And I hear a lot of my guys do that now. You can't hide behind that. Very rarely is that true. And I have some people that owe me money that haven't paid me. And I had to pray about that because I had a resentment. And an amend isn't saying you're sorry. It's doing something about it to fix it if you can.
Taking action.
Yeah. And the weird thing that happened with me is when I did those and made all my amends, I lost the resentment I had for myself. It was just miraculous. So we do 10. I don't like the word maintenance step because we don't stay in one spot. You're either going forward or backwards. And for me, I continue to take my personal inventory, and when I'm wrong, promptly admit it. We had a guest on our show, Dr. Glenn Pickering, and he said, wrong doesn't mean you're bad. It means you're wrong. That was a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I used to rationalize, justify, defend why I was right. And sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand him. That's 11. And every day I get up, pray for sobriety before I get out of bed, read the daily bread devotional, and then read my Bible. So 12 is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. We carried this message to others and practiced these principles in all our affairs. So what we're looking at is we don't just stop drinking and we're good to go. You got to follow Christ. You got to pick up your cross and deny yourself. And you need to have people that have the authority in your life to give you feedback. And my guy is a gentleman named Danny, who's 82 years old now. But Danny would always tell me the truth. Like my dad, he loved me enough to tell me the truth. And I'm thankful that my Heavenly Father loved me enough to give me a father who told me the truth or I would be dead. And so I got through the steps, got sober. At 7 years sobriety, our family candy company that was national did a lot of private label work, and I was a salesman going all over the country. And that helped me get sober. Gave me something to do, got a tie on, you know. And they sold the company. I had a third ownership. My sister and my dad wanted to sell. Crushed me. So Danny told me, he's a teacher at a school. He's the psychologist. Obviously, he's not a very good psychologist, or I'd be doing better, but that's a whole other show. He said, you should get a job because you got too much money, too much time as a elementary school playground supervisor. Yeah, like right.
Was that he was kidding or he was serious?
It's like, come on, Danny. So anyway, I wound up doing it, and first year was tough. I was everlasting quarterback at recess. But once I learned how to read the playground defenses, I couldn't wait to get to school every day.
Mm-hmm.
It was the best job I ever had. So in my third year there, and I'm thinking I'm going to make a career out of this. I'm standing outside. It's in January in Minneapolis, probably about 5 below. And I look into see the school and my reflection's there. And I'm thinking, kind of look like a loser, you know? And these two sixth graders were talking, and one of the guys said to his buddy, I'm going to Blake School next year.
Tell people what Blake School is.
It's the best private school in the state of Minnesota.
Okay.
Prep school. That's okay. Where I got kicked out of. And that's why I don't have much of a career. No. And it was part of my recovery. So anyway, I go, that's where I went. And the kid goes, no, you didn't, because if you did, you wouldn't have grown up to be a loser playground guy. Okay, this is a sixth grader.
Wow.
So if I smack him, I'm going to prison. And I'm driving home and I'm thinking, the kid's right. So the next day I drove up to Hazelden and said, what do I need to do to be a counselor?
Mm-hmm.
I needed to go get a, I talked to a guy and he said, you need to get credentialed. So I went to the school for 2 years, went to graduate school. I'd had a business degree. I worked at Hazelden. I worked at University of Minnesota Fairview, and I was program director at the Salvation Army. And that was the best gig I ever had. I loved it. And one of the things I was able to do, a big component of my recovery and my graduate school thesis, was using endogenous-induced endorphins to help people get sober. One of the things everybody misses is the high.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I started working out, doing triathlons. So my dad, on his deathbed, and of course I had forgiven him at age 30, 3 years into recovery, to have a relationship. I was there in the hospice when he was dying. And he said, I want to set some money aside through a foundation so I was to get your guys' YMCA membership so they can work out and have the same advantage you had.
Wow.
And so we were able to do that. And I met Bill Arnold down there. Bill Arnold was a volunteer who became our Friday night speaker. And I knew who Bill was from his play, Triple Espresso, which was international. And I used to listen to him speak. He was really good. And he came up to me afterwards one time and said,
we were out on the street in front of the Salvation Army.
Okay.
I remember that.
And you said, why don't you ever talk about holiness?
About personal holiness.
And I think I've said this twice in my life. I don't know. And he said, would you be offended if I gave you a tape? It was Tim Keller, CD.
Yeah.
And if you like it, I'll give you some more. That started the relationship. Love Tim Keller. About a year later, Bill said, you want to do a radio show? And I said, I have no talent. And he said, you're right.
That made two of us.
Yeah. So we came over and you met with the guys. I was with you. Mm-hmm. We're in our 11th year. I want to go back real quick if I can. I got a couple things left.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I know that God forgives us of our sins if we ask. 1 John 1:9, I believe. I never forgave myself for not taking my mom to the hospital. And that happened in 1977. In 2010, I'm program director of the Salvation Army in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I had to kick a guy out for drinking in our program. It was very sad. I'm standing on the street with two garbage bags full of stuff. He's my age. His mom pulls up in the car to get him and help him in the car. She drives off. I'm thinking, doesn't get sadder than the shop's car. She gets out. She comes over. She goes, George, I don't know if you know this, but your mom was a real good friend of mine. She'd be real proud of what she did with your life. Gone.
Now you're killing me, George.
The second one was the doctor I called in the middle of the night, woke up, because the other doctors weren't good enough for me. I'm standing here at Faith Radio waiting for you one day, and I look at the plaque of the board of directors that helped build this building. And Dr. Wesley Burnham is on there. And God said to me, see, I'm here. I've always been here. I love you. I got a plan for you, and I forgive you.
Hmm.
And it's like, I wouldn't want to have missed this. Thanks, everybody at this station. I listen to Chuck Swindoll and still do to help me get sober. And to be on the same station with you, that's a God show.
Yeah. You keep bringing up Swindoll. Do you ever listen to my show?
Bill Arnold's show?
Yeah.
Did it take you a long time to come up with the name?
Yeah, we had a creative meeting and
I listen to your show all the time. It's great.
Oh, good. I feel better now. George, that's an incredible story. I love what God has done in your life, and I love you, and I love our friendship. And I love this show. So thank you very much. And thank you for listening to the show tonight. And if you want to send George a little note of encouragement, you can text it over 877-933-2484. 38 years of recovery is pretty awesome in September. So we're going to just say goodnight. Thank you for listening and supporting Faith Radio, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.